I'm going to draw.
Okay. I want to do something, as I said before, really, really special. At least from my perspective. And we're going to do it in a couple of stages. Please be a little patient. See a lot of pieces that have to come together. In Perek Yud Gimel of Shoftim, we have something which, to the best of my knowledge, is one of three in Tanakh. There are three such narratives in all of Tanakh, and one could argue, one could quibble, and you know, count less or more, depending on exactly how you define it. But to my mind, it's one of three. And I'm not going to tell you three of what just yet, but we'll get there. I want to start by asking a simple question, or rather trying to elicit a simple question, which is, in Perek Yud Gimel of Shoftim, there's a glaring, glaring kasha, right? Like a tremendous kasha, something like just as soon as you read the Perek, you're hit by something strange, bizarre, almost unique about this Perek. What is it? What's strange about the way things are presented in Shoftim Perek Yud Gimel? Yeah?
I just find it a little bit odd that you can decide before the child is born that he's going to be a Nazir, when in a normal case that's supposed to be a personal decision of that person based on their own tendencies.
I hear that. That's great. And it's a much more sophisticated question than the question I want to ask, but it's a great question. And no doubt that's something something to think about. I think that there is, you know, an explanation for it, but we're not going to so much focus on that right this moment. But good, it's a good kasha. What else is difficult here? I think it's something we'd ask even maybe to ask him before that. Yeah.
Every single time they reiterate what the original commands were given to the woman, they're either slightly different or parts are completely missing.
Okay, so this is a good illustration of, you know, the phenomenon that I always point to, which is that people, you know, see all these wonderful, advanced, sophisticated, complex things, you know, these subtle things that are beautiful, like way before seeing the eyes. So that's an excellent point, but I'm a very simple person. I'm looking for something much simpler. Exactly, that's the problem. That's what I'm working on.
Look at that one word. Exactly.
Yes.
What does the first pasuk have to do with the rest of the whole story?
Okay, I'm not bothered by that because of the fact that the chapters are not innate to the, you know, they're not part of Torah, they're not part of Tanakh, they're not part of the text. They are not of Jewish origin even. Okay, they're of Christian origin. And, you know, there are reasons why, I'm not saying there aren't historical reasons for it, but it doesn't have anything to do with understanding the Zepth. I mean, it's a good question, but you're right, it really starts from Pasuk Bet. Yeah?
What is Shimshon's mother's name?
Okay, now we're getting someplace. Okay. Yeah, is that what you want to ask?
There's no real reason for the angel to come down again. It doesn't add anything to his previous
statement. Okay, good. That's a good question, but it's more subtle than what. But repeat again.
Shimshon's mother's name.
Okay. It is tremendously unusual, almost unheard of, that you should have any such example where the hero or heroine of the story. Okay, I'm not talking about a secondary person, but where the hero or heroine of the story, where someone who is as positive and important, and those are two different things, but as positive and important a character as Esh HaManoach, to not have her referred to by name, this is not normal. It's not normal. Imagine if, you know, in Megillat Esther or Megillat Rut, you know, just referred to, you know, Mrs. You don't have such a thing. It doesn't work that way, right? There is hardly a parallel example of someone who is of this, you know, and it's clear. What? But in that, you know, okay, and you know, it's a good question, but I think that this is even more, and I think there are three examples by women. There are one or two more by men, but there's three examples by women that need to be understood. And we're going to look at three examples of women. In fact, that's the title of the shir, is Nameless Women in Tanakh. Okay, now that we've gotten the question out, that's the name of the shir. And We will get to it. But I'd like to address it on two levels, okay? Both of which are true, I believe. I don't think that it's one or the other, but there are different levels of understanding. First, we'll do the simpler, and then we'll get to the more to the deeper explanation. Okay, when ready, let's start with the simple. First of all, Vayhi ish achad mitzara mimishpachat hadani ushmo Manoach v'ishto akara v'lo yalada. And look how incredible! It's not just that Manoach is named, and his wife, who is a much more positive character. Even leaving aside the Gemara and Brachot about, you know, Manoach being an Am Haaretz and all that, just look at the Psukim. I mean, Manoach is certainly not nearly as positive, even if he's not negative, he's not nearly as positive a character as Eshet Manoach, right? Now watch what happens. Manoach is not only named, but much more than that. We're told that we're being told his name, right? Ushmo Manoach. And we're told where he's from, right? We're told where he's from, where he comes from, his origin. Not so Eshet Manoach. Eshet Manoach, we're not told where she's from, we're not told her name. And then ostensibly, right, l'chora, that's a slight. It seems like, you know, ki'ilu, she's treated in a disparaging way, but it's not true. Let me show you why it's not true. Simple chart. Okay, let's make a quick chart. There are how many characters of significance in this chapter? How many characters? How many main characters are there?
Three.
Three. Beautiful. We have Manoach. Yes, help me out. Who else? Eshet Manoach. And who's the third? The Malach. Okay. Right. That's why I said three main characters, because Shimshon is kind of foreshadowed, but not really, he's not really there yet. He's on the way, but okay. We'll get to Shimshon, Ezra Hashem, but for the moment. Okay? And I didn't mean to put so many columns, sorry. Forget about this one. This is just a freebie. Here we go. And we have name and place, or origin. Okay, Manoach. Are we told his name?
Yes.
Okay. We're told where he's from?
Yes.
What about Eshet Manoach? No. Okay. What about the Malach? What happens with the Malach?
Don't know his name.
We don't know his name, and not only don't we know his name, but we don't know where he's from either. Take a look. It says explicitly. Okay, it says that in, where is it? Over here. Pasuk Zvav. Batavo Heisha Vatomer Leisha. Lisha Lemor, Ish Elohim Ba Eli, it's referring to Malach. Umar Eu Kimar E Malach Elohim no Ram Od, Veloshi Iltiu Amy Zahu. I didn't ask him where he's from. Bet Shemo, Loi Gidli. And then when they ask him his name, he says, you know, Landishalishmi, Bopeli, and therefore the Malach. Right, so what do you notice?
That she's like an angel.
Meaning, all I'm trying to point out is, and this is just the first level of understanding, in this particular context, the fact that she has no name and no place, what does that indicate? That if we break it down to two categories, right, Manoach is just not on the same page as the Malach, the way Eshet Manoach is, right? And that's the simple answer. That's the superficial answer. Okay? Meaning that you look at it and this is very true. Who does the Malach speak to primarily? Eshet Manoach. Right? So the fact that she is described in a way that puts her on the same wavelength as the Malach, right, that's we understand that. But that's not the real answer. I mean, I think it's true, but I don't think it's the real answer. We'll get to the real answer, Be'ez Rashem, in a little bit. Okay. She's told about the birth of Shimshon. Now, as I said, there are two other cases that we need to consider. Two other cases. So let's take a look. Okay. Malachim Bet Perek Dalet. Okay, the other two cases are very similar stories. And right, Isha Shunamit and Isha Hatzarfatit. Okay? One is the hostess of Eliyahu and the other the hostess of Elisha. Let's look at Elisha's story. And the two are really two parts of one story. As we well know, and Chazal connected, it's obvious that Elisha and Eliyahu are parallel characters, and the parallels are drawn again and again, and certainly these stories are very much parallel stories. But let's take a look at this story. It begins with the idea of hachnasat orachim, right? Vayhi hayom vayavur Elisha el shunem. Hence the isha shunamit. V'sham isha gdola, which I assume doesn't refer to her proportions, but to her weight or whatever, but just her importance. She's a very important woman. She's an isha gdola, right? She's an important woman. And what does it say about this important woman? That we're not told her name, first of all, right? But techazek bo lecholachem, and vayhi midei avro yasur shama lecholachem. Whenever he passes by, he goes there to eat. Vatomer Elisha, hinei na yadati ki ish elohim kadoshu over aleinu tamid, nasel na aliyat kir kitana v'nasim lo sham mita v'shulchan v'kiseyam nora v'ayah b'vo'o aleinu yasur shama. So it begins with the story of hachnasat orchem. Okay, that's the beginning of the story. We continue. And Elisha says to Gehazi, what can we do for her? Okay, what can we do? What does she need? Pasuk Yudalid. Vayomer umala sotla, vayomer Gehazi, aval bein ein la v'isha zaken. Okay, the fact is that her husband is old and she doesn't have a child. Okay. Vayomer kira'la, vayikra'la v'tamod b'patach, and the wife stands in the entrance. Vayomer lamoed hazeh ka'et chaya at choveke ben. Right, this time next year you're going to be grasping a child, a son. Vatomer al adoni ish Elohim al techazeh b'shivchatecha. Right, don't lie to me. Meaning that, like, don't disappoint me. Don't lie to me. In other words, she's saying that, you know, I hope this is true. If this is not true, don't get my hopes up for nothing, or don't disappoint me by not having it come true. In any case, we can sum up her reaction basically in one word, and that is that there's an element of doubt, right? She doesn't just say, yeah, of course, it's going to happen. She has a certain amount of doubt regarding this prophecy. And it continues. Pasukizayim batar heishava teled bein lamoed hazeh kaet chaya shadiber eleha Elisha. And of course, we know the end of the story is that this child, either totally, partially, whatever interpretation of mafarshim you want to take, involved in Rashash and Nida and all the other mafarshim mechule. But bottom line, for our purposes, basically, we end with the story of the child dying and being brought back to life, Tchiyat HaMeitim, being brought back to life by Elisha, paralleling the Tchiyat HaMeitim of the son of the Shah HaTzarfatid back in Malachim Al Perek Zayin in the story of Eliyahu. Okay? There is such a powerful and clear echo here. It's hard to miss it, right? You look through what we just read, and this, if you take the bare bones, if you take, you know, strip it of some of the small details, like the place and the name and the, you know, bigadol, this story is almost word for word taken from where? Right, the story of Avram and Sarah and the Malachim that come, right, and tell them about the future birth of Yitzchak. And if you compare even the language that's used, right, it's very, very powerful. Let's turn the page for a second. Let's turn the page for a second. Okay, Bereishit Perek Yudchet, towards the middle of the second side. Let's look inside for a minute. Okay, Bereishit Perek. Did I not give you the sheet? Why didn't you ask me for it? Oh, you guys are too polite. My goodness, I apologize. I'm too tired, and you're too polite. Yes. Please, Vakasha. Yes. Say that. Yes. Mean, is it? I'm hogging them all to myself. And, oh my. I apologize. I'm sorry. I meant to give them out after you looked in at the top, and I just totally got wrapped up and forgot.
Excuse me. I haven't changed my ring yet.
Who's calling you?
It's not
yours. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Thank you. They would not get a sheet. Okay, middle of the second side of the sheet that you now have. Bereishit Perek Yud Chet. Okay? So again, we start with the Hachnasat Arachim. Obviously, the story of the Malachim coming to the house of, to the tent of Abraham begins with Hachnasat Arachim bringing in the Malachim. And it continues, as does the story of the Ishash and Amit. It continues. And let's just read a few psukim for just a moment. Let's start from Pasuk Yud, for example. Okay? First of all, we start with Vayomer Shov Ashuv Elecha Ka'et Chaya Vinei Ben L'Sara Eshtecha V'Sara Shomat Petach HaOel Fuacharav. Right? Parallels are incredible. You continue. V'Avram V'Sara Zekinim Ba'im Ba'imim Chadal Liyo L'Sara Orach Anashim V'Titzchak Sara B'Kirba Le'mor Acharev Loti Aitali Adna V'Adoniza Kain. Right? Again, right? This is word for word, except for there it's Gehazi speaking to Elisha, but the content and even the wording is the same. And of course, Pasuk Yudalid, Pasuk Yudgimel, what's Sarah's reaction? Vayomer Adonai Avraham, Lama zeh tzachacha Sarah le'mor afum na meleid vanitzakanti. This element of doubt, and Pasuk Yudalid, Heipalei me Adonai davar lamoed ashuv elecha ka'eid chaya ulesarah ben. Okay? I mean, the parallels between this story, the echoes are just so powerful, it's very hard to ignore it, certainly once we see it. Everyone see it, right? It's Barur, yes? Okay. And of course, what's the end of the story? The end of the story is how this child, who is miraculously born to these parents, right? The child is ostensibly taken from them by God and then returned. Right, and that's of course Akedat Yitzchak. Right, that's Akedat Yitzchak. That's the end of the story. So we go from this model of Avram and Sarah. We continue with right this image of Yitzchak, and the parallels are very, very powerful. I'll go a step further. If we now go back to the child that's born to Eshet Manoach. Okay, and by the way, this is all by means of explaining why we're not told the name of Manoach's wife. Just bear with me, you'll see. If you look at the bottom of side two, you have the story of Shimshon. Okay, so the story of Eshet Manoach, of course, leads into the story of Shimshon. The story of Shimshon is a very strange one, right? We've all struggled with the story of Shimshon. And leaving aside the superhero aspect of it, it's just fascinating. We have this Shofet who is involved with not one, but many, and not just regular Plishti women, but including Zonot, etc. It's an incredible, incredible story. Ostensibly a very sordid tale of the Shofet, and very hard to understand. And I'd like to suggest, just in terms of a direction, there are many details to discuss and to work out, but just a direction, and to show you one or two points in terms of that. If you look in Perek Yudal, the very beginning of his career as a shofet, Vayomer lo aviv imo, when he first decides he's going to get married to one of these Plishti women, so his parents say to him, as we would expect, what, there's no nice Jewish girl to marry, right? That's exactly what they say. Vayomer lo aviv imo. Ha'im bivnot achecha v'chol ami isha. There's no woman in our nation. What's going on? Ki ata holech lakachat isha miplishtim arelim. Vayomer Shimshon el aviv. Ota kachli ki hi yashra be'enai. What a strange answer. Ki hi yashra be'enai. What would we have expected? I love her. I desire her. I'm obsessed with her. Right? Something of that nature. What's the answer? Kihi yashra be'enai. That's what I think is right. Right? That's what I think is right. What's going on? So the next pasuk, depending on how you read it, and I think one could read it more than one way, deliberately. Vaviv v'imo, I mean the pasuk is deliberately phrased that way. Vaviv v'imo lo yadu k'mi Adonaihi. Ki to'ena hu mivakesh mi plishtim. Uva'et ha'i plishtim moshlim b'Yisrael. The Jews are under the thumb of the plishtim at this moment. And Hashem... One reading is that it's Hashem. Another reading is that it's Shimshon, right? Or both. I would argue for both. Are looking for a pretext for attacking the Plishtim. Okay? Listen very carefully. Remember the story of Shimshon? Yes, everyone remembers the story of Shimshon? General terms, right? If you think about it, what happens with Shimshon? The Plishtim are controlling Bnei Yisrael, right? Bnei Yisrael under the thumb of the Plishtim. Shimshon gets involved with one woman after another amongst the Plishtim. He hangs out, he has all these barroom brawls and these bets and this gambling and this, you know, vendettas and all this stuff that goes on. And he ends up destroying property of the Plishtim and killing Plishtim and causing them all kinds of problems, etc. And avenging Bnei Yisrael against the Plishtim. But one thing, at no point during his career throughout his entire life, never did the Plishtim turn and say, look what the Jews are doing to us, we're going to go and attack the Jews back, right? We're going to go and wreak revenge against the Jews. It never happens. Why? Because it's never seen as the Jews are doing this to us. How's it always seen? There's a personal issue with Shimshon. Shimshon, you know, they did this to his wife, they did this to his wife's, you know, father's house, they did this to, they you know, cheated on the bet, they had this, you know, this fight, they wouldn't let him, you know, take his wife, this, that, and the other, and there's all this stuff going back and forth, and Shimshon, what does Shimshon have to do with the Jews? He's hanging out with the Plishtim, he's involved, all his buddies are Plishtim, his wives and whatever else, they're all Plishtim, right? What does Shimshon have to do with the Jews? And Shimshon is able to attack the Plishtim again and again without it ever costing the Jews anything. Right? It's an amazing thing. Ki toinahu mevakesh. Right? That's what's going on. Therefore, what does Shimshon say when he gets involved with this first Plishtim woman? He doesn't say, because I desire her, because I want her, because I love her. He says, because kihi yashra be'inai. Right? That's what I think is the right thing to do. And the next pasuk explains, ki toinahu mevakesh, because he's trying to find a pretext for fighting against the Plishtim without getting Bnei Yisrael involved, without it costing anything for us. Shimshon, yes?
So the Radak says that basically until the very end, all the women he was involved with and all the things we're involved with, all, we're all completely for the same Hashem, that's why Hashem let it go on. Even though we know that we're not supposed to marry an Jew, you're not supposed to marry an Jew.
Right, until...
commit murder or whatever.
Mm-hmm. 1,000%. And I think that, you know, this explains as well why Shimshon needed to be a Nazir. Right? Shimshon needed to be a Nazir because to be this kind of an undercover agent, to be in this kind of situation where he was totally immersed in these actions and these people and so on, and to not lose his identity, right, he had to be a Nazir. He had to have that insulation. In any case, the point I want to bring out is that there are many indications of this, and I'm not going to go through all of it, but what I really want to bring out is the following, that Shimshon's life, right, Shimshon's life, you know, just to give you an indication, one of the places where he I think, hints at what's going on, Pasuk Yudalit, Vayomer lahem, Mea ochel yatsa machal, Me'az yatsa matok, What's his chida? That which is bitter and that which is destructive came something, you know, came life and came sustenance and came something sweet. Meaning, how do they look? How does everyone look at Shimshon? How do his parents look at him? How do his friends look at him? All the Jews look at him, right? As being this totally destructive, you know, person who's just totally corrupt and bitter and awful and. But really, what's he doing? He is saving Bnei Yisrael, right? He's saving Bnei Yisrael throughout. And if you think about it, at least to my mind, it's hard to think of a more tragic character in Tanakh than Shimshon, who is doing everything for Bnei Yisrael, and they're cursing him out, probably, right? They think that he is the worst, the biggest lowlife, and they're, you know, totally... and his own parents, and he has to live with these, you know, his wives and his friends, so-called, where these are his enemies. And on every level, he's totally isolated. Shimshon's life can be summed up, I believe, in one word. Let's give one good English word for Shimshon's life. Are you laughing at me again? What's the one word that can sum up Shimshon's life?
Odd.
Okay, tragedy. What else? I think of a different word when I think of Shimshon. the word sacrifice. Right? He gives up everything. Everything. Tremendous. It's one big sacrifice. And if you look at it, what's his end? What's the final scene? Right? Where? Tamot nafshi and plishit. And he dies, where? At this great banquet of sacrifice. Right? That's what's going on. They're all there to sacrifice to Dagon. And he is the korban in that final, you know, he sacrificed himself. He sacrificed himself throughout his entire career. And in the ultimate sense, he sacrifices himself in that last moment. Who is the paradigm of a person who is a sacrifice in the Torah? And you see the end of the story. The end of the story of Shimshon. And how? What is Shimshon at the end of the story?
Dead.
He's blind. Well, but at the very end of the story, everyone's dead. But he's before that. He's about to die. He's blind, right? Like Yitzchak. And it even talks about how the Plishtim take him to be Mitzachek, right? And the whole thing about Tzchok and Mitzachek, and which are exactly Yitzchak. The point is that if the story of Esha Manoch and her husband is parallel to the story of Avram and Sarah, the child that's born, Shimshon, right, not surprisingly, is parallel to Yitzchak, right? Just as the children of the, you know, Isha Shunamit and the Isha Tzarfatit are also parallel to Yitzchak, right, with the Tzchiyat HaMetim. These are the two major aspects of the Akedah story, which is at the center of Yitzchak's life, the idea of the human being the korban, and the idea of Tchiyat HaMetim. Right? And we put the two stories together, the three stories, I mean, together, the story of the Isha Shunamit and Isha Tzarfatit on one side, and the story of Esha Manoch on the other, you put it together, that's what you have over here. Okay? Everyone with me so far?
Yes.
Okay. So, to this point, we have number one, right? We have Esha Manoach, Isha Tzarfatit, / Shunamit. We have their children, right? And this is where we're at. Okay? Besef. We're almost done with the introduction. A few more minutes. The story of Sarah is part of a larger story of the Avot and Imahot, but let's look at Sarah for a moment. The story of Sarah is a fascinating, fascinating, fascinating one. First of all, to begin with, Sarah, let's use her full name. What's Sarah's last name? Thank you. There we go. Tend to be informal with Sarah, but nonetheless, Sarah Imenu, right? Sarah Imenu.
I thought it would be like Sarah Ben-Hara.
Look how fascinating this is. You look from the beginning of the Torah, from the first generation, through all those 10 generations until we get to Noach, then you go further until you get to the, you know, from Noach to Avram, another 10 generations, and every one of those generations, there's one thing that we're told about every person that's mentioned, from Adam all the way down to Avram and Sarah, there's one fact that we're told about every one of them, other than the fact that they're born and they die. Right? They have children, right? Right? It talks about their having children. Every one of them, right? And basically, the you know, except for those who were told more about, it's a story of having children, generation after generation after generation. The first Akara in the entire Torah is whom? Who's the first Akara? Who's the first Akara? Sarah Imenu. Isn't that incredible irony? You hear that? You understand how ironic that is? The first Akara is Sarah Imenu. If you didn't know better, wouldn't you say the last person in the world who should be an Akara is Sarah Imenu on many different levels? Right? Isn't that like so ironic that Sarah Imenu is the first Akara? And Bereishit Rabbah asked the question in a slightly different way, but asked, why were the Imahot Akarot, right? And the incredible irony of it is tremendous. But you have to understand, the fact that generation after generation, there was childbirth, how do we categorize the childbirth during all those generations? What is it? The childbirth is what? more than that. It's also the fulfillment of a curse. Fulfillment of a curse. Right? What does Hashem say to Chava? Be'etzev toldi vanim. Right? Be'etzev toldi vanim. Everyone remember this? Yes? After the chait of Adam and Chava, Be'etzev toldi vanim. And therefore, there's the fulfillment of that. Be'etzev toldi vanim. Until what point, what's the first time that there's a woman who is not subject to that curse of Chava, who's the first one not to be subject to the curse of Chava? Sari Menu, she's an Akara. I say, but she did have a child in the end. Yes, but when does she have a child? Not as a result of the Klala of Chava. She has a child only when she receives her own special bracha in Perek Yud Zayin. Right, verachtiota v'gamnatat mimenucha ben, where it's a specific bracha that's given to Sarah that she's going to have a child. It's not just a continuation of this klal of Chava be'etzev tel divanim. What's more, be'etzev tel divanim in every other case, and what does it say by Sarah? Tzchok asali Elokim kol shamea yitzachakli. She doesn't give birth in etzev, but exactly the opposite. Right? It's not an etzev; it's in tzchok. The antithesis of Eitzev. What's more, Chava is told, V'hu yimshol bach, right? That Adam is going to rule over you. And what does it say by Sarah? What does it say by Sarah? Kol, what? Kol asher tomar elecha Sarah, Shema v'kol ases Hashem ta'avam. Sarah is the antithesis of the model of Chava that we have after the Chait of the Eitz Hadaat, right? After the Chait of the Eitz Hadaat, Hashem says to Chava, you were supposed to guide Adam properly, and you didn't. Lehefech, and therefore, v'hu yimshol bach, right? And as a result, there's going to be be'etzev tel divanim, and so on and so forth. But when Sarah comes along, and Sarah is a real Ezer Kenegdo to Abraham, and she does guide him properly, and she is a proper moral guide to him, and then religious guide to him, then kol asher tamay lecha Sarah shema b'kolah. It's just the opposite, right? It's just the opposite of what we have. But it's not just the opposite of what we have by Chava. It's more than that. What it is really is a return to what Chava was intended to be originally, right? When Chava is first created as the Ezer Kenegdo, and Adam is supposed to be guided by Chava, and she's supposed to be the Ezer Kenegdo. So at that point, right? That's what Sarah is. Okay. Everyone understand so far? Yes? Okay, so we have Chava, and we have this is Sarah Kol Asher Tamar Elecha Sarah, so on and so forth. And then afterwards we have this idea, right, of the Eitzev Toldi Vanim. I'm not going to write all the stuff, but you went over and Vuhu Shol Bach, and so on and so forth. Okay? We're all up to speed? Yeah. Yes? Ready? Okay, now we're ready for the shiur. Okay, everyone listen carefully. Listen carefully. You've got to watch. Okay. Good. Everyone ready? Don't begin yet. Everyone ready? I want to add one more point, and then we'll understand exactly what's going on. Chava is called Chava when? When is Chava called Chava?
After the
Chait of the Eitz Hadaat, and as a result of the Chait of the Eitz Hadaat, right? Ki hi aitai im kochai. It's really part of the rebuke for what she did wrong, comparing herself to Nachash, and so on and so forth. The point is that really this is inaccurate to say. Really, we should say is that here we have Chava, but before, what is she called? From the very beginning. What? Haisha. Okay? What she's called before the chait of the Eitz Hadaat is Haisha. Okay? What you have in these three women, right, who are modeled after an aspect of the Sarah story, you have a return to what?
Little woman.
Right? Exactly. To the state of the Haisha. And therefore, if you look, what does the Malach say to Esha? What does the Malach say to Manoach? When Manoah says, what should I do? What are my instructions? What's the answer? Do what I told your wife. Follow the ktivuim that I told you. Just listen to the instructions I gave to your wife. There's an echo of what Hashem says to Avram about Sarah. Kol shetamai lecha Sarah. Shema b'kola. Right? And the same thing happens with Eliyahu and the Isha at Tzafratim. I don't go through all the details right now, but we find this is a theme that runs throughout the whole thing. The point is that it's far from being an omission that it doesn't mention their name. It, you know, refers to them just as the Isha, right? As Haisha throughout the story. It's not an omission. It's not something that just like stam, you know, for whatever reason or because it's some kind of a slight or whatever. Lehefech. This is the whole point, or certainly one of the central points of the story. Then this way, these women are like Sarah Imenu in the sense of being returned to being a return to the state of Haisha. And whereas I know that by Sarah, obviously Sarah is also referred to as Sarah, that's because there are other aspects, there are other facets. You know, this is one chapter in the story of Sarah. There are other important chapters in terms of what Sarah is about. And we're not going to get into that right today, but there's certainly a lot to say about that. But in any case, the point is that this is the idea of Sarah Imenu that plays out in the story of these three nameless women who are referred to really as Ha'isha, not b'mikra at all, not by chance, but because that's the entire point, is that they are returned to the status of Ha'isha that we have in Perek Bet and Perek Gimel before we get to the end of Perek Gimel where Ha'isha is transformed into Chava as a consequence of her role in the Eitz Hadaat. And I think that if you look at these narratives carefully, I'm done. If you look at the narratives carefully, no, you can turn it off if you like. The point is, I meant you can stop the stopwatch, but okay. Now the point is that if you look at these narratives, the more closely you look at them, the more you look at the details, I think the more you'll see this idea borne out in terms of what's going on here in the way that these three nameless women are referred to. It's really not that they're nameless at all, it's that they have a very, very special name, and that name is Ha'isha. It's the idea that I want to share with you about this. I think it explains many, many things and really is part of many other larger pieces, but for now we'll make do, I think, with this idea. Okay.